Welcome to Hedge Interview. This episode is part of the Service Provider Spotlight series, which features insights from important financial service providers that support fund management. My guest today is Scott Treloar. He is the co-founder and CEO of Novisiant, based in Singapore. Novisiant helps emerging fund managers set up and operate non-US domiciled funds through their Fundbox AI platform. Scott has 20 years of financial markets experience. Before co-founding Novisiant, Scott was a portfolio manager at Volpes Investment Management. And before that, he headed up a quant team within Deutsche Bank's Singapore trading business. He also spent several years in venture capital at Macquarie Bank. Welcome, Scott.
Thanks, Jennifer. Glad to be here.
Great. First, tell me about your inspiration for co-founding Novisiant.
Right. So Novisiant, we identified, while I was working at Volpes, what we identified was it's increasingly hard for emerging managers to get started. So emerging hedge fund managers, rules and regulations, expectations are kind of getting higher. Institutions expect more robust infrastructure. And so what that meant was emerging managers really needed a sort of larger AUM to get started. And so they would, you know, typically say, I'd like to start a hedge fund. They would go to a prime broker or an administrator and they would say, that's great. We'd love to help you. Have you got $50 or $100 million in seed funding? And the manager normally says, no, I don't have that. And they sort of go away. And that's really, we think it's a function of hedge funds still operating as a cottage industry the same way they've sort of operated since last century, in essence. And so we think with technology and platforms, we can sort of open up a new way and start to provide a better way for managers to get started and in particular to get access to investor capital.
And when you say get started, you mean in Europe primarily or, you know, in what regions?
No, so our emerging managers can be anywhere. Basically, our model is we will set up a fund vehicle. A fund vehicle is actually domiciled or based under Singapore's VCC structure, but the managers can be anywhere. And so we'll have managers based out of Europe, out of the US, out of Asia. Even got one that we're hoping to start out of South Africa. So that will be our first one from that continent. So, but essentially, because they can send trading strategies and signals through to us via the internet, they can be based anywhere.
But where does that mean that they are targeting? Is this basically, where are they? This registration investors. Allows them to target investors on that side of it.
So investors can really come from anywhere. So our existing funds will have investors out of Asia and out of Europe. US is always a little complex because there's sort of a tax complication, but not insurmountable. We just need to set up a feeder fund. So investors similarly can come from anywhere.
So, and that was my next question is how is this different from setting up a master feeder fund? Or is it the same?
Yeah, so sort of similar. The vehicle is the vehicle, but if you set up, say, your own hedge fund, regulators and investors will sort of expect you to have a full team, operations, compliance, legal, marketing. They'll expect you to be managing your broker relationships. And what tends to happen is the managers who should be focusing more on the trading spend all their time running a business. And in a sense, being a good trader and running a good business, not necessarily the same skill set. In fact, almost no overlap. So what you really want is them to be focusing on the trading and to, in a sense, outsource. And so we're in a platform and we will look after all of that from client onboarding all the way through to investor reporting. And we're a little different in that we operate what I'll call a digital operating model, which means it's really information streams, which allows us to keep the costs very low, transparency for investors and for the managers high, and manage the risk effectively.
And how were you able to put this together? How did the technology change such that you could make this available?
Right. So I think, I mean, the strength is really to come from a clean sheet. If you're kind of coming already from existing infrastructure and technology and people and processes, you'll find there's a lot of spreadsheets and there's a lot of checklists and there's a lot of people with who know what to do in their heads. And really what we're trying to do is actually, well, let's start afresh. Let's understand what you really need to do. Let's increasingly digitize. We're kind of pushing Excel spreadsheets out. We're trying to push PDFs out. We're trying to bring a whole lot of it online. And so we just spent the last 5 years essentially building, starting the first few managers, learning how to make things increasingly efficient, working out how to work with emerging managers because, you know, they've got their own challenges, they've got their own objectives, they want to be successful. And, you know, as you speak to them, what you sort of find is, you know, they'll say, listen, I just want to do this thing, whether it's it could be also work with, say, some VC managers. They want to get out and find good deals and execute and then help those companies succeed. What they don't want to do is be running around looking after sort of investor reporting and doing all the paperwork for running a fund. Similarly, traders ought to be, you know, the really good traders ought to be spending all their time trading. But instead, what's happening is they're spending, you know, 50% of their time or more marketing, trying to figure out how to get capital in. And what that means is it becomes, firstly, on a, you know, a standalone hedge fund, you have this cost base that is just painful to absorb. It shortens your life. If you've really outsourced a lot of those costs, so, you know, we'll operate a fund at 20 to 25% of what a standalone fund would cost. You just have a lot longer to generate a track record to prove to investors that you're able to deliver excess returns and alpha. So it's specialization in a sense, right? Traders and VC groups should be doing what they should be doing. Operations, compliance, legal is sort of a matter of efficiencies and scale economies and doing things well and repeating those processes and separation actually adds a lot of value.
Right. And do you work with specific types of asset managers or all types? And size-wise, I understand probably smaller ones are an optimal fit for this offering,
Yeah.
but what are there any strategy types, or does that not matter?
Doesn't matter too much. So we will, I mean, we sort of focused or certainly started with hedge funds. So anybody trading futures, FX, equities, long, short, long only, extended a little bit to venture capital because venture capital is its own game. The sort of venture capital fund approach is really you have to start somewhere. So you start with, say, a $30 million venture capital fund. Hopefully, you identify some good investments and it's successful. And while that's successful, you then start the next fund where you can raise maybe $100 million. And then you start the next one where you can raise 300, 500, right? And so you'll make your money in subsequent funds, but you somehow have to survive and have the first fund do
Right.
well. And again, you don't want to be doing all that stuff yourself. You want to sort of ideally partner with somebody who can provide you good infrastructure and deal with the stuff that allows you to focus.
And so, what are the features of Fundbox AI? Is it primarily focused on the registration, or do you cover other aspects of fund services as well?
Okay. So we will partner with our trading partner or our sort of VC partner. We will essentially be the fund manager, but we can't do anything without our sort of partner. So, but we'll take the regulatory sort of responsibility for the fund, and our role in a sense is not to do the trading or the risk management even, but actually is really to provide the oversight so that the fund is operating the way it's been represented to investors, it's operating and it's done efficiently. So what we can do, we will set up the fund, If it's a new trading fund, that can be set up really for $10,000. A lot of the infrastructure is already in place. We just need to understand a little bit of what you're trying to do, spin up a new vehicle and it's there, and then we'll run the fund with service providers. You know, we have existing service providers, administrators, auditors, that and corporate secretary and things, directors that people need. But, you know, we can sort of switch them in and out. So if somebody wants to have a particular prime broker for their fund or a particular administrator, that's easy. We can just onboard them and run that. So it becomes very straightforward, plug and play in a sense, right? Tell us what you're trying to build. We'll set it up, get it going. And, you know, within a month, you know, if we're both efficient, we can have the first trade happening.
That was my next question. How long does it take? And so, you know,
yeah,
could be a month, could be longer. On average, is it about that long, or what's the average time it takes to get them up and running?
Yeah. I mean, so to put in context, to set up your own fund, firstly, you'd have to have a license, which might, right now, where we are, that's a sort of 9 to 12 month process and extending a little bit. But then you have to kind of do all these things that you're not really used to, right? How do I contract with the service providers? Which are the right service providers? Is that sort of fee structure for that administrator right? Where do I find directors to take some risk and sit on the board of my fund? And, you know, lawyers, which lawyers can give me the legal infrastructure for the fund at a price that doesn't kind of kill me? And so we've already done that, and we kind of are quite good at doing that. And we also don't have any, we don't charge any markup across any of this. So really, we sort of try to work as best on the side of our sort of fund manager partner. We want to find the lowest cost or service providers that meet the sort of quality that they're comfortable with. And because we've done it a lot, we can just get it done efficiently. So, you know, it might otherwise take people 6 to 12 months to really get a fund up and running. As I said, we can, if we really want to push, we can get it operating within a month, but at most probably 2 months.
And so what is the process for the fund manager? Let's say they contact you, the process, how do they, do they just sort of hand over the reins to you for a period of time, or what's the process?
So now we'll process to really onboard. We'll give them a link. We systematize everything to keep costs low. They'll sort of start to fill in some information. We have existing legal documents. So the information that they kind of complete in these online forms feed into the legal docs, you know. And so, for example, if I'm setting up a new trading fund, I need to define my sort of target return objectives. I need to talk a bit about how I'm going to do my risk management, what sort of volatility I'm expecting, what instruments I'm trading. And we sort of capture that and put that into an existing fund document. We kind of agree that that's fine. We can then go to the statutory board here to create the new fund vehicle. We'll tell the MAS regulator here that there's a new fund starting. The fund manager has to give us a name, and then they also later have to start to let us know who their sort of initial investors are, so that we can start to do some AML KYC on the investors to make sure kind of that's fine. We'll then sort of get subscription documents in place, and then they can sort of put money into the fund. And then, you know, we'll have in parallel be setting up connectivity with the brokers that we sort of jointly want to work with. Money will then be transferred, you know, under the administrators basically govern how things work, but, you know, under the documents, the administrators, and we will kind of transfer money to the broker accounts. And then, you know, day one, first trade can happen.
And what are some common mistakes that managers make in this process that you would say, you know, this or that could really slow the process, or this is where managers can get hung up unnecessarily? What would you say are the pitfalls to avoid?
I think the view would, sometimes managers will come in and they'll sort of be saying, listen, I need tier one service providers, I need those expensive lawyers, I need the best audit group, because otherwise people won't take me Seriously, but what happens, and we can do that, but what happens is you end up just spending a lot of money. And when people start a fund, you're not really going to be bringing in a half a billion dollars from a large institutional investor. You're going to be going from friends and family and some friendly family offices and high net worth individuals. And so you need service providers that are good, robust, if people have sort of heard of them, they're not a two-man shop down the street, but you don't want the really expensive ones at the start. You can, every couple of years, it's okay to sort of upgrade your service providers, but the idea is to sort of really start. Don't take too long to get going, to get, value for money service providers on board. That just allows you to get started, build a track record, and then, with a track record, you can now go out and start to talk to people. It's hard to talk to people. This is my great fund. I'm going to set it up. It's going to be real, and people will listen, but they won't do anything until you kind of at least have a fund and you've started a bit of trading, and they can sort of see a little bit of track record. Then it's a lot easier. So in a sense, get going relatively early. So that's
Yes.
probably avoid the high cost service providers.
Right. I've been hearing that a lot lately, that it's just sure, that's great if you can do that, but it's a barrier often to getting going, and that's not good. So thank you for reaffirming that. I've heard that
No.
before.
It's true, and in a sense, we're sort of seeing, hedge fund launches over the longer run declining just because it's getting harder. You'll still have these kind of high profile, somebody spins out of Millennium and they're given half a billion dollars to get going, or they've got this great pedigree out of an existing fund. And so it looks like it's sort of going all right, but that is not really enabling a new interesting generation of managers that have perhaps more creative ways to trade markets. It's sort of, in a sense, perpetuating the existing, ecosystem of very large people with larger managers with pedigrees getting money from large allocators. Whereas really we want, because it's harder to get started these days. Banks don't have proprietary trading in the same level they sort of used to. You can't start a fund until you sort of have bigger chunks of money. It's just not obvious how to get going. And in which case you sort of tend to lose that pipeline of good talent kind of coming into the environment.
And how would you say the process of working with Fundbox AI, how do the costs differ? I know obviously that the whole point is to make fund registration and operation more accessible to smaller managers. So, what would you say is the actual cost, average cost benefit of working with your program versus the traditional way?
So, I mean, I think it's increasingly very difficult to set up a standalone fund if you haven't got somebody to give you $100 million or more. And even $100 million, maybe you charge 1.5% management fees. So maybe you have $1.5 million in consistent revenue. But if you have a team of five, people are expensive. Your compliance and legal people are expensive. That's gone already. So even $100 million, you're struggling to do well, right? You really, and that in a sense is good and bad. If you have a $10 billion, then you can sit there comfortably and your management fees pay for everything, and you can, go skiing and stuff on your holidays,
No one
in a
starts with
sense,
that.
right? No, that's right. But you're sort of kind of comfortable in a sense, right? This is the challenge. This is the challenge of emerging managers versus the established incumbents. The established incumbents, you wonder about their motivation because, is the edge still there if you're comfortable, right? So investors like that. They want emerging managers to be not desperately poor and struggling to survive, but they want them to be thinking more about performance, which comes from, having your cost base kind of okay, but focusing on how you can deliver better performance for your customers. Whereas large, managers managing billions and tens of billions, I don't think they just have that motivation. So we want this emerging manager space to do well. And allocators will also say to us, listen, we're really interested in that space. We just can't invest because, we're just not confident in their infrastructure and how they're put together. And so we, to a certain extent, can sort of be a more mature, sort of father figure in a sense, mother figure of these sort of smaller managers. We provide the oversight. We're not motivated to trade and punt and double up if things are going badly. So we're the sort of grown up in the room in a sense. So investors can sort of feel okay. So there's, because hedge funds can be tricky, right? That if you're a hedge fund manager, you're the boss, right? You might have a risk manager, but the risk manager is employed by you, right? So even if the risk manager tries to tell you not to do something, you just, get another risk manager or something, right? So that a standalone fund has that risk, and you will definitely see funds get into trouble like that because, normally the hedge fund manager is a dominant personality, right? They're not really that consensus oriented because that's sort of the style a little bit, and there's not a countervailing force, if they're the principal. So in a sense, partnering with managers just provides a sort of more balance. What we're sort of saying is let's make sure everything is being run as represented to investors. We're trading the universe we agreed with. Our risk controls are sort of in place. We're not breaching things. Pre-trade checks are sort of happening. And then the manager is almost more comfortable as well, right? Because they sort of, there's a bit less pressure on them. They just, say, listen, I have to do the best I can do. And they're not able to do anything more than the investors would really like.
Speaking of investors and allocators, do you provide any sort of cap intro or not so much?
No, Fundbox is the infrastructure, but what we are doing, because we sort of noticed this, we are looking to build out and work with particularly digital marketing partners, so ways to more effectively let investors know the sort of types of funds that are available and those characteristics. And because we are sort of building infrastructure across multiple funds, we can provide more analytics and better transparency because we build once and roll it out over multiple funds. So we can provide this sort of transparency and analytics. And we have, for example, what we call the fact box, which is a widget-based fact sheet. So each manager can sort of design and just move widgets. I want to show risk exposures, and I want to show a performance curve, and I want to show the historical returns, and I want to show my factor exposures, and sort of build that. And that becomes a sort of online sheet that they can just provide to investors as a link, and the investors can PDF it if they want. So we think there's a lot of interesting ways under a digital operating model to create better connectivity between investors and our underlying funds and fund managers. It's early in that game, but we're pretty interested in trying to work on better ways to do that because it's a big
That's
problem, right?
a big that's a really helpful type of service to provide. It's
It
almost
is.
like a performance database mechanism where there are those platforms where managers provide their month-end returns, and then investors come to check out all these different funds. So that's really, if you're adding that on at some point, I would think. And plus just creating those fund fact sheet materials for them That's super helpful. That's
Yeah.
helpful to investors as well. Investors are looking for that information. So that'll be a
That's
great add-on
yeah.
at some point.
We also have full trade level information because they trade, they send signals to us and we'll sort of execute via the relevant brokers. So we've already built trade level analytics. Just look at bets and frequency and bet sizes and wins and all sorts of things that you can sort of extract from a sort of higher granularity look at the information, which we can provide in two ways. One is we can actually push it back to the manager to say, listen, this is what we're sort of seeing, and this might be helpful for you in terms of maybe sort of some of your position sizing or working on your exits from positions because maybe it looks like your exits are sort of losing you money a little bit. But similarly, we can provide much richer analytics through to investors. So we can talk about, they say, these are market neutral, and they're sort of not that market neutral. These are the sort of tail correlations. This is our sort of drawdown, intraday or daily drawdown rather than just a sort of monthly return. So yeah, potentially we can provide much better analytics. And then
That's a
what we'd
heavy
like to,
lift. That's a heavy
yeah, I know
lift.
it's, but you can do it once in a sense, right? And try to, then we can sort of generalize it across and offer it across lots of managers and lots of investors. So there's a sort of logic, sort of economies of scope in terms of doing it once and letting everybody use it.
What type of technology do you use to do that? Because you had mentioned that you want to move away from Excel and so forth.
Spreadsheets.
So, how does that work? Not that I would
So we,
understand
it's
all the
okay. I'll give you
technology,
a
but.
summary, a simple summary. But so all our technology lives in a sort of virtual private cloud and in Amazon. We have schedulers that run and give us oversight in terms of when we should be doing things. So if we've got to load the benchmark data, we'll do that once a day. We're going to have a dashboards for that. We have a portal that has multiple views on our sort of data. The fund manager partners will be able to see sort of their trades and positions and P&L and the capital they've got. We'll also have a view for investors. So each investor has a sort of login and they can sort of see what's happened to, their specific capital, and all the documents are there. And so it becomes that where we're trying to get to is, right now, what will happen is an investor will invest into a fund, and once a month or once a quarter, they'll get a PDF that says, this is what happened. But they don't really know much what happened between them. Whereas for us, we can give investors, they can basically log in and say, okay, so I made $6,000 yesterday and I lost $2,000 today, and my exposure is across these asset classes, and this is the product, and here are my all my sort of subscription documents, and here's the commentary from the manager each month on what's happened. So it becomes a sort of two-way engagement, because where we want to get to is move from products to solutions in a sense, right? The industry is built around salespeople flogging products, but investors really need solutions. So you need a kind of two-way thing rather than a one-way information stream. So part of building a digital operating model is we can start to give our fund manager partners and our investors insights they can sort of look in and potentially even sort of provide information back into us for how things are going to, what's happening. So for example, our manager might, we might have a quarterly fee structure with them. So instead of a, say, can you please now email me an invoice? That'll just be on the portal. So they'll have a look and say, yeah, I agree with that number, tick the box, and the sort of money will be paid automatically into this account. So that sort of digital approach just strips out a whole lot of cost. It speeds everything up, and it also starts to innovate in terms of the relationship with the manager, innovate in terms of the relationship with the investors, and also the service providers. So
Right.
we're trying to bring the industry into the 21st century.
Right.
So
Those efficiencies are very compelling.
Oh, they should
You
be.
know, to the
Okay.
managers and to the allocators, I, you know, that's definitely compelling. Where are you seeing most of your new business coming from in terms of fund managers? Where are they based? Are you having a are they coming from Asia, or where are they based?
It's more a function of where they're based anyway. So to an extent, there's a lot in the US, so we work with US managers, European managers, Asian managers, but it's just a sort of, there are fewer Asian managers, there are more European managers, and there's a lot of US managers. And we don't care. They'll, you know, you could have an Asian manager trading US equities, or a US manager trading Japan long short equities, something like that. European managers trading commodity futures. So
Right.
for
And
us, it
what are
doesn't really matter for us.
right. What would you say are the typical costs of your service on average?
Okay. So if you want to get started, setting up a new fund will, we'll say $10,000, $5,000 to pay a little bit of legals, $5,000 just sits there because in the event that things don't pan out, you have to shut the fund down. You can't really reuse it because it's got a track record that nobody wants. And shutting down a company, which is a fund, you just need to do, that's a process. So that gets you the fund. Operating the fund, we think we're down to around $20,000 to $25,000. It's a bare minimum of costs to the fund or the service providers, administrator, audit, directors' fees,
Is
filing,
that
tax and all that sort of thing.
would you say is that annually or on
Annually,
it
yeah, correct.
annually? Okay, great. And so my last question is, what do you think helps an asset manager be successful from your perspective? What's the most important thing?
So, I mean, we look at a lot of managers. We've in various parts of what we do, looked at over 200 managers, and we just try to run a process where we try to understand what they are. They'll sort of come in and fill out some forms, and we'll ask them questions about, you know, how do you handle risk and what's your universe and can we see your trading history, all that sort of stuff. What we find is I think the, you know, or at least let me characterize what I would expect from, or we sort of see from successful managers. One is they typically have a product market understanding, right? They don't come in as a technologist saying I'm going to trade futures. They usually have to have done it. And because financial markets are fiddly, annoying things with different holidays and ways to trap you up, and it's full of people just waiting for you to get it wrong to take advantage of you. So you need to sort of understand that product market space that you're going after. You need some technology to leverage and to sort of improve what, you know, to provide leverage to what you're doing, right? You don't really want to be with a pencil and paper going, I'm going to buy this or sell that. But the third thing is you need to somehow be contrarian or some sort of edge, so doing something different. You know, we'll ask people, do you have a different, you know, what's the information source that you're using for your trading? What's the modeling or the sort of framework that you use to make your trade? So somewhere in that thing has to be some contrarianness or some idiosyncrasy, because otherwise you'll be doing what everybody else is doing, and there's no alpha in doing what everybody else is doing. So managers, so, and these people who are like that are often a little bit unusual, right, themselves. They don't naturally fit into a, say, you know, and for, they don't want to be part of a big firm, right? There's a reason they want to start, set up and run their own fund. It's because they don't want to be part of you know, JP Morgan, because they don't fit. They're sort of, you know, like that. And we like that as well too, right? We're also saying to the industry, you know, this, we think this is not good. We think there's a much better way to do this, and we want to sort of shake things up. So you're sort of, we're looking for people who are a bit like that, and we can handle you know, interesting people and characters. We're really data driven. We just look at the data and say, okay, fine, you're sending us the signals. If there's alpha, there's alpha. What's your, did you go to an Ivy League school? We don't care. what gender, race are you? We don't care. Just let's understand that there's some sort of edge, and you're able to do, deliver some extra return for our investors.
That is the bottom line. I tell my manager clients all the time, like, what is your point of differentiation? What is your competitive edge? Because that's what allocators are looking for. They want to know that you're doing something different for sure. Yeah, that's super important. So how does a manager find you? What is the, where, what, tell us your website.
Fundbox.ai. That's
great.
Also Navisiant.com, and you can also kind of get there from there, or you just look me up, Scott Treloar, you'll find me. I'm very noisy on LinkedIn, so you can sort of message me there. But we have a, we try to be transparent and open. So we try to put out as much information as we can about how things work. And we can always do better, but fundbox.ai is a kind of starting point for that.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Scott. And this is really helpful for smaller managers who want access to, you know, non-US registration and so forth. So that's really, really helpful. Great. Thank you.